6000 for 10,000.
270, climb to 12,000, South 1063.
Welcome to Frequent Flyer. Here it is, Thursday, January 25, 2024. We are back, full team tonight. Mike is back. His diagnosis came from the Philadelphia Flyers medical staff, in which they told me to be on IR for 6 months, when in reality, all he needed was some Robitussin and a cough drop. So it's good to have you back, Mike.
Thanks. Great to be with you guys.
Manny's here as always.
Hey, guys. I wish that it was under better circumstances, but I know that we will dive in and into this issue and go into places that a lot of places just won't go. And with a Canadian and a lawyer and the incomparable Mr. Esch, we will definitely get some good questions and some good discussions on a very serious topic today.
We did a show with Papa last night and trying to talk about this and it's a difficult topic. Carter Hart, as of right now, nothing has happened, and I assume nothing really is going to happen further until the London press conference, which I believe is scheduled for the 5th, right after the All-Star game, believe it or not. And that'll be when I think everything officially hits the fan. But for now, he and four other players from the 2018 World Juniors are on leaves of absences from their teams in preparation to surrender to the police for their part in the sexual assault in the 2018 World Junior mess conundrum. And on this show about a month or two ago, we did a full episode after the Hockey Canada findings came out and that subsequent appeal and kind of what that meant. And the takeaway from that was that it didn't really matter because that's Hockey Canada. That's not the police. You know, this is the governing body of, hey, you can't play a force internationally anymore. And this time, this is the real deal. This is the police. And you know, I guess we all knew it was going to happen sooner or later. Although the way they kept delaying it, we didn't know it was going to happen. The fact that it happened during the season and not like the third week of July is actually kind of crazy. But it's here. And Hart is gone. He's more than likely played his last game in Philadelphia and probably the NHL, as have, you know, the other guilty parties. So I'll just, I'll open the floor to you guys, whoever wants to go first and, get your thoughts on this situation.
Yeah, I can start us off and just some, you know, preliminary thoughts here on it. I think, you know, the stuff with the Hockey Canada report and the appeal and all that stuff, that seemed to be more of the civil case. And we dissected that very well a few months ago here. And then I think where we left off when it came to the criminal matter was, and I think Manny, you called this out absolutely perfectly, was it's up to the London police. You know, nothing's going to happen until the London police want it to happen. And lo and behold, that's where we're at right now. So they're the ones that initiated this at this point. And, you know, and we discussed as well, you know, it certainly was possible that this never happened, that this criminal case really just kind of sat in a filing cabinet somewhere until the end of time, you know, for a variety of reasons, whether or not the victim wanted to, you know, pursue this, whether the evidence was strong enough. You know, that was certainly a potential outcome here, was that this would just sit and, you know, be forgotten about, and the potentially culpable parties would have to live with that until the day they die. That doesn't seem to be the case now. It seems like there's, you know, certainly some action here, where London police have basically requested that five individuals that were associated with this matter voluntarily present themselves. And I think that they basically probably, you know, through their attorney said, look, you know, we are going to move forward with this, and either you can do this the easy way or you can do this the hard way. The easy way is you show up on this date, and the hard way is we get a warrant and we come drag you out of wherever the hell you're at right now and bring you back to London, Ontario. And, you know, obviously the parties want to keep this as private as possible. So, you know, they're voluntarily going to be showing up. Now, certainly we don't know who's involved yet. You know, we certainly know the five players that have taken these indefinite leaves of absences. You know, I think that you can put the puzzle pieces together here with the circumstantial evidence and, you know, kind of speculate that perhaps these five players are the ones that are going to be showing up. We don't know for sure yet, but it seems like kind of that's what is set on the stage right now.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we called a lot of this stuff. I mean, listen, we put our three heads together. We do come up with some good topics and have a good understanding of things, regardless of what people spin as positive or negative or whatever. I don't know. I thought that the bombshell that Carter Hart announcing, you know, that he was going on an indefinite leave of absence right before a game, I think that caught everybody in surprise for certain. And the fact that that even got out to the media when it did, I kind of wonder about that and who in the organization kind of put that out there, because I could see if the organization suspected that it had something to do with Hockey Canada, the investigation. But I don't know. I just thought it was very convenient timing that Danny Briere already had a scheduled press conference, you know, the night after, and that all of these you know, allegations were going to surface at that time. I want to give a shout out to Danny Briere, because it's going to sound weird, but that was a very uncomfortable press conference, and just watching it, you can see he was very uncomfortable. He read the statement word for word off the paper. Obviously drafted by the legal team there in the Flyers front office and directed by the NHL. And he just looked really uncomfortable. He looked pale. He looked like he didn't want to talk about it. He wanted to talk about anything else other than that. And he kind of looked relieved when the focus shifted to the actual hockey team and the trade deadline and everything else. That can't have been easy for any GM, let alone a rookie GM in the position that Danny Briere is in. And I thought he handled that as best as he could, given the circumstances. And I want to give a thumbs down to the first couple reporters who decided to ask questions about Carter Hart and the investigation, mm-hmm. even though he clearly said that, listen, we cannot talk about this. And it's not because we don't really want to or we're holding things back. It's a legal thing. And it's now in the court's hands and the police's hands. That has to play out here. It doesn't matter what Danny Briere thinks. It doesn't matter what the Philadelphia Flyers think. It doesn't matter what any of these players think. The matter is going to go before, you know, a judge, a jury, and the courts. And it's going to be about the law and about what the law says and thinks. And I thought it was stupid that those reporters decided to press Danny Briere on, you know, Carter Hart and this and that and goaltending and the Hockey Canada, did you know? And what did he can't answer those things. Bunch of dopes.
Marcus Hayes would expect, but yeah.
I didn't even know who it was.
So. I think there was a few of them based on that conference that, you know, immediately Briere's prepared statement. We are aware of this morning's press reports on very serious matter. We will respond appropriately when the outcomes of the investigations are made public. The NHL has made it very clear that teams should refer to all investigation-related questions to them. In the meantime, members of the organization, including Flyers players, will not be commenting any further. That's all we can say at this moment. And then you got about 5 minutes. Well, what about Carter Hart this? What about Carter Hart that? What? Apparently somebody tried to pull that on John Tortorella during today's media presser as well, the pregame presser. So I was like, what, you know, this is not, what more can you say in this situation? They legally can't say anything, and in part because legally nothing has happened yet, you know, so it was very dumb by the media, but yeah, you know, we tried to give it the benefit of the doubt at first. You know, obviously Dylan Dubé took a mental health leave from Calgary a couple days beforehand, which real shitty look on them, by the way, for saying something like that when he was probably leaving to go fucking go to prison. But yeah, I don't know. You know, it was kind of like, hey, you know, Carter Hart, listen, the thing is, at first, this could have been a dozen things. You know, this is a guy that is on an expiring contract. It hasn't exactly been handled well recently by Tortorella. You know, the ice time splitting, was he just done? He had that mystery illness back in December that he said he was looking at a treatment for. Was he going to Columbia to get some kind of stem cell treatment? Was it, you know, whatever he was going for? There was reasonable doubt there at first. And then the following morning, next morning at, you know, 9 a.m., everyone puts out the Canada thing that they're requested by the police. So, again, nothing has happened yet, but the dots are there to be connected. You just got to put those pieces into the puzzle, but... Yeah, it's not looking good, and I mean, I guess the question then becomes, what are the consequences of their actions now? Is this a is this a prison offense? Is this a financial, like, what do they do now?
So with all the payment stuff, that's not going to be part of the criminal case. That was part of the civil case and whatever settlement happened with Hockey Canada. You know, I don't know. You know, to what extent the players were involved in contributing to that settlement, or if it was Hockey Canada itself that we, you know, was funding that, or how it happened. But there's not going to be any, this is not about money at this point. This is about a criminal statute and whether or not the defendants violated a criminal statute in Canada on based upon what the evidence says that they did or didn't do. One thing that I think is still kind of, you know, interesting here is, it's still this cat and mouse game of exactly who the identities are of these people. You know, obviously have five individuals that are on definite leaves of absences, but I'm kind of curious to see the extent to which they're going to still try to maintain anonymity during this process. You know, are there going to be media at the London police station whenever they show up over the next week or two here with cameras and saying, okay, who's showing up and presenting themselves? Is it going to be a situation where they're going to present themselves and, you know, go through a private entrance or show up in disguises and they're, you know, going to maintain anonymity that way? I think once it is absolutely confirmed there's a camera on the specific defendants here, that's when it's really going to blow up. Because right now there's still a little bit of that cloak of like, well, we think this, but we're not sure about it yet. So I'm curious to see how that plays out over the next few weeks.
God, can you imagine the meltdown if they kept that as secret as they possibly could and they didn't know for sure if someone like Carter Hart was involved in this?
Yeah, and they've been doing this shit for 6 years now. And, you know, I think that there's obviously a massive public interest in this. And, you know, at some point, the people are going to need to know who's involved here. And, like, you know, I mean, in the U.S., when you're a criminal defendant, at least when you're an adult, you know, your name is on the docket and dockets are public. And you will be known if you're involved in a criminal case. And I'm assuming dockets, at least criminal dockets for adults, are the same way in Canada.
They are. Unless you're a minor under the age of 18, then they will put initials instead of your full name. But yes, you're an adult. You committed a crime. Your name is there. You have to be present in court and you have to face charges. And that's it. There is no special protection for these guys. I'd imagine the interesting thing, just to piggyback on what you were saying, Mike, about the whole anonymity thing and what you were saying, Dan, I've seen, and we've all seen reports saying, you know, 8 players, 11 players.
Yeah.
You know, we've got 5 right now, but in the course of a proceeding in a public trial where the public is allowed to go and see the court case. We don't allow TV cameras and stuff in the courtroom, but it is open. It is a crime against the public and people can go. There might be provisions for some kind of special request or whatever. I really don't see that being the case in this case. But at some point during the proceedings, the names of other players are going to be out there and thrown out there. Now, as to their direct involvement or indirect involvement with what happened on that particular evening with that particular young woman whose initials are EM, according to all the documents, right? I don't know, but I guarantee you that those names will surface at some point here.
Yeah, the 5 names was interesting because I thought there was 8. That was the seemed, you know, reason number. There was 8, and 2 of the players that everyone kind of assumed were, quote unquote, like the most guilt, that, you know, the people that have spent, you know, the time deducing all of this were Maxime Comtois and Boris Kachuk. And neither one of them are among the 5 listed. So is that just because they don't have enough evidence to personally convict them yet?
Yeah, that's my best guess, Dan, is that, you know, over the past couple of years, the police and or whatever the equivalent of a district attorney is, you know, in Ontario there, they take a look at all the evidence that they have and they basically determine, okay, these five, we have the best chance of successfully prosecuting. We have enough evidence to move forward with charges for these five. Now, there may have been others that were involved in some capacity or that perhaps were aware of what was going on or, you know, involved in a fringe capacity or something, but there may not be enough there for them to feel that they can successfully prosecute them. And they may be left off of this. I can't see them, you know, pursuing these five and then all of a sudden there's another three in a couple of months or something. I would imagine that this is going to be one full swoop of everybody that they feel they can prosecute at one time. So, you know, the fact that Carter Hart might be or seems to potentially be one of those core five here is obviously very, very disappointing and very jarring. You know, not that we know Carter on a personal level, but, you know, seeing him publicly doesn't seem like the kind of person that may participate in something like this. But, you know, I guess you never know. Yeah, I think that's what it is, Dan. I think that we're dealing with the core five here. And, you know, the others may have had involvement with the civil suit, you know, but the standards there are, you know, wildly different than what they would be in a criminal case.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been thinking before we get into the ins and outs of the court case and what we can expect and everything else. The thing that kept going into my mind, and it's Mike, you alluded to it. He doesn't seem like that type of guy. But what do people when they're interviewed on, you know, the news always say? Oh, the person was so
never
quiet.
Saw it coming. Yeah,
never saw that. I can't believe it. Like that, such a nice guy. And again, I don't want to say that he's not a nice guy or a nice guy or whatever. I don't know him, but I just keep thinking of the fact of, you know, when he was drafted out of Everett in the WHL, you know, he was living with a family, a billet family, and he forged a nice, you know, friendship and a bond with a young man with autism. A child with autism.
Yeah, I remember
you
that.
You know, and it's like, you sit there and you're like, what does that family think of this guy now?
Yeah.
Like just being associated with this act, whether, however culpable he is or isn't, or whether is, you know, his, however innocent or guilty he is, just by being associated with this act, like just the level of disappointment and stuff, like letting that kid down, that family down, like making a complete, I don't even want to say error in judgment, because this is a criminal act. This is more than just a simple error.
Yeah, like, the level of sophistication that was involved in this alleged act is extremely high level and like outrageous.
Yeah, like that's what I think about. Like what would your parents think? Like, what are you, like people in your life? Like you're gonna have to, like that's who you are now. Like, even if he's found guilty, people are always going to say Carter Hart, the guy from that Hockey Canada investigation. Like, he's going to wear this now for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It is unbelievably jarring to think, you know, the involvement. I mean, just, and what's even more crazy about this is, like, you would think that in 2018, you know, this isn't 1972. This is 2018, where like the level of training and like mental tutelage that these guys get as they are going through, you know, Canadian juniors and the Hockey Canada system, I would imagine is highly sophisticated with how they train them to make, you know, good judgments and, you know, what their future is on the line and, you know, how to act in public and, you know, that sort of stuff. And the fact that this happened so recently in time is like unbelievable to me that on this scale, that all of these players potentially could be involved in something this egregious is just mind blowing to me.
It's always weird when you think about the stuff, when you hear the hazing rituals and this shit, you always think, oh, it's, you know, from the 80s and stuff, you know, long ago. And the fact that something this horrific can happen modern day still with these people is, yeah, it's disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple layers to this. I mean, at the same time, the whole Hockey Canada investigation thing has kind of was them admitting that, you know what, we need to put more things in place because we haven't done as good of a job educating and training these players. That's what I'm getting out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, but it's also society. Like I'm older than you guys, but I mean, the stuff that kids are exposed to nowadays growing up, like we had to like actively search out, like, you know, go into somebody's garage and, hey, does your dad have that, you know, Playboy from, you know, the last month or whatever hanging around? And that's kind of what you would be exposed to. Now it's like the most hardcore of hardcore, like pornography and sexual things. And it's really warping.
It's on my fucking Twitter timeline daily.
Right. And you know, I try to ignore it and block it as best I can, but it's like it's a tidal wave. It just doesn't stop. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're a young person and you're being exposed to this. It has to warp what you believe sex is and what a nice, healthy relationship between two people is, regardless. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just not doing a good enough job as a society, and in particular mm-hmm. with young men. This is a guy thing in particular. And in truth, it goes both ways too, because guys are really confused. What is an appropriate thing? What is inappropriate? There's everybody's being telling you like mixed messages, and now you're told like a kiss on the on the mouth is sexual assault. I don't believe that, but I don't know. Like, it's confusing for people. It's very confusing, and I can see why this is a big mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point, Manny. Also, like, and you know, I don't want to get in the weeds, you know, on exactly what happened, but like the stuff with the golf clubs, it's just like unbelievable that would be even like a part of what this was. And he used like a weapon, like a scare tactic. I was like, this is unbelievably outrageous. This was coordinated on this level by a group of people that, you know, have their futures made, that have been through allegedly, like this like huge program of years of training on how to act and how their career is going to go and all this sort of stuff. It's just, I can't get my mind around like the level of just, it's just not even idiocy. It's just, no one ever thought, hey, wait a second, this is wrong. We got to, you know, somebody's like, oh my God, it's just, I can't even get my mind around this stuff. But,
it's hard to wrap your mind around that. This could happen, that this many people could coordinate something this fucking heinous. You know, it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in, that, you know, especially again, Carter Hart, somebody like that, and all these players, you know, did what they did. I don't know. It's a hard thing to talk about, hard thing to kind of wrap your mind around, that this happened in the first place.
What's the drinking age up there? Is it 18?
19. In Quebec, 19? It's 18.
Okay.
19 everywhere else in Canada.
So were they drinking underage at the time?
That's what I was going to try to find out. Because some guys are 18.
Yeah, right.
And some guys are 19. I'm pretty sure Hart was 19.
So like, you know, and this is just like another legal question, but like, I don't know if like what the dram shop laws are up there, but like, are bars potentially liable if they're serving underage people and then certain crimes are committed? I think it's called Jack's Bar. Are they involved in this, at least in the civil and maybe the criminal suit? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it is illegal to serve alcohol to a minor. Yeah. You're not allowed to do that. So there would be something there. I'd imagine that these guys were of drinking age. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just trying to think through, you know, the timeline of what's going on here and just what we can anticipate. So these guys at some point, and I mean, like on TSN, the headline was five members of Canada's World Junior team told to surrender to London police. That right there says, all right, there's some big trouble right now on the horizon. You better get in here now. And then if you actually read the first sentence of the article, it says they were told to report to police, which is a different word. But regardless, they're going to be told what's happening. And if they're going to be charged, they're going to be informed that they're going to be charged. And then they're going to be either thrown in jail in a holding cell until they get, usually it's about 24 hours. And then they have to see a judge to talk about bail and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's going to be the case. I think that the police are going to let these guys out on their own reconnaissance on a promise to appear in court, because there's not really a flight risk in mm-hmm. this particular game. I mean, one of the players is flying in from Switzerland, Formanton, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Switzerland doesn't have extradition laws. So, I mean, if he really didn't want to face this, he would have just stayed in Switzerland and said, whatever, I'll just never go back to Canada again, which would be a real dick move.
Roman Polanski.
Yeah, right. So, but he is coming to Canada, and by all accounts, all five of these guys are going to, you know, report or surrender to the police, however you want to put that. And I'm pretty sure that they're going to be seen as, you know what, they're not a flight risk, and we'll see you guys in court if they are charged, which again, I'd imagine signs are pointing in that direction. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what we can look forward to here in the next, on February the 5th.
Yeah, I agree with that, Manny. I think they're going to be, I mean, I can't imagine they're just going in for a casual chat, you know. It's like, look, we are going to book you, or you're going to be arrested. We're going to book you. And, you know, whatever that process, I'm assuming the process is similar in Canada as is in the U.S. in terms of how that intake works. And yeah, I agree. I think that they probably will post like some form of bail. I mean, like any other criminal, you know, if you can't post it, you will have to sit in jail while the criminal proceedings go on. I imagine there'll be a bail set. They'll all pay it. Then they'll be able to, I can't imagine they're going to be allowed to leave the country. I mean, possibly, but, you know, they'll sit in Ontario and kind of go through that whole criminal process. And probably a lot more public than it's been right now. I know that these identities, you know, they don't want to say who's who and who's involved, but you know, the toothpaste is coming out of the tube, and people are going to know, and they're just going to have to live with that at this point, you know?
I guess it's a hard to answer question until we know officially what they're actually charged with. But do you know, consequent, like what are prison terms? Is this a, you know, life in jail kind of thing? Is this a couple years? Do, you know, what is the likely outcome of what we're looking at here, time served wise?
I mean, it could be very significant.
Okay, so just to give you an idea, so I did look it up, and I wanted to make sure that I had it as right as I can be. I'm not a lawyer, but in Canada, so sexual assault is one of either two things. It's an indictable offense, which is a more serious nature. And then there's a summary offense, which is like a less serious kind of charge. I would guess that this is an indictable offense. And it says an indictable offense is liable for an imprisonment for a term of not more than 10 years. So it has to be under 10 years. If the complainant is under the age of 16, then it's 14 years is the maximum. However, the minimum punishment for imprisonment is 1 year. So I say that, I don't know if it's changed in the last few years, but I know that when, you know, I was in, you know, university and stuff, there was always this debate about how sexual assault as a crime in Canada isn't really prosecuted to the satisfaction of the victims and to many people who observe the legal system. And that in general, those that are convicted and found guilty generally have found more lenient sentences in comparison to other jurisdictions in other parts of the world, yeah. Etc. I don't know if that's changed or not, but I mean a maximum of 10 years, but then you look and you know the lawyers are going to get involved. These guys don't have criminal
they're going to talk
records about, yeah. You know, they all of the stuff that they go through, right? I don't know, but it looks like it's a minimum of 1 year and a maximum of 10.
Are there other more serious charges? And I'm saying this seriously, is rape considered something different than sexual assault?
No,
in Canada.
The term is sexual assault. Okay. I don't know why they went away from the term rape. I guess it was just a term that was kind of shunned and looked down upon. Now there are three different levels of sexual assault. So there's level 1, level 2, and level 3. So level 1 indicates that the assailant committed an assault that was sexual in nature, but though it compromised the sexual integrity of the victim, no physical injuries are inflicted. This may include inappropriate touching, unwanted kissing, oral, vaginal, or anal sex. On this level, the matter of consent is critical. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really going to be the main question of this case. Mm-hmm. Level two is a sexual assault that causes bodily harm or involves a weapon or threats to the third party.
That's at play here as well.
Okay. See, I didn't know about the golf club thing. So yep. That's news to me. So that then it's a, definitely a level one. It could potentially be a level two. And then level three is aggravated sexual assault where you maim, disfigure, or permanently, you know, injure somebody in a physical manner.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting that the maximum there, I guess, is a 10 year sentence. That's I didn't know that. Okay. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm glad you looked into that statute, Manny. That's, I think, really helpful just to kind of understand, you know, what the penalties are that are potentially at stake here. And those seem to be the most serious. So maybe some other offenses that are involved here. You know, I don't do criminal law, so I'm not sure. You know, I'm sure there'd be some other things stacked here that may increase that term. But that's probably, you know, the core crime here that, you know, is on the table.
Just one other thing to add. It's not like in the US where you can get like, you know, five consecutive life sentences.
Mm-hmm.
You get life and then that's it. So like mm-hmm. whatever the mat, if you did like multiple crimes, my mm-hmm. understanding of, let's say I robbed a bank and I had a gun and I discharged that gun and I hurt somebody or killed somebody in the commission of that crime, I'm not going to get found guilty of, you know, robbery, 7 years, robbery with a weapon. Okay, that's 10 years. So now that's 17 years. It's not going to go like that. It's going to be basically, they're going to be found guilty of all those counts. And then they're basically going to take the one that's the longest. And they're going to say that's what you're getting. Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. I'm assuming that plea bargains are pretty popular in the Canadian system as well. And I would be shocked if this case or these cases are taken to trial. I would imagine there would be some negotiating behind closed doors as this thing progresses.
I'm really glad you mentioned that because I was going to actually ask you about plea bargaining. Mm-hmm. It is popular and part of the deal is to keep cases out of court because courts are always busy and people don't like spending lots of money on, you know, things for the public, especially in a day and age where, you know, everybody's counting their pennies for government spending, etc. I would imagine, I don't know if the Crown is going to feel the public pressure to push through and go through with the court case anyway, mm-hmm. or if there would be some sort of, these guys would have to plead guilty, obviously. What would they plead guilty to, and what would the sentences be? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I would imagine that it would be in the player's interest to not have details and things brought up. Mm-hmm. Especially if they are interested in continuing some type of hockey career. Whether or not that's a realistic thing or not, I don't know.
Yeah, but just to be a functioning member of society, I think, is right. What their goal would be.
Right, exactly. So I think it would be in their interest to try to strike a plea deal. How receptive the Crown would be to that, depending on how strong the evidence is in their case, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that the Crown probably would realize that, yeah, these players probably would want some kind of a plea deal, depending on what it is. It would be interesting to note that after they get processed and surrender to police, the next day or so, they would go to court, as I said, and that's when the legal advisors, the lawyers would get, here's all the evidence that we have, and this is what we're going to court with. And then the defense team or lawyers, depending on how this is going to shake out, is going to be looking at that evidence. And I guess they're going to have to make a judgment call on how strong they think the Crown's case is, mm-hmm. and whether or not they can actually fight this thing mm-hmm. or not.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Yeah, that's exactly it. Probably. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're looking at, even if there is a plea deal reached, I mean, you're still looking at multiple years in jail minimum. So it's going to, you know, it's not like they're getting out with, you know, 15 hours community service, you know, serving the homeless soup. It's not going to happen here. So
yeah, I'd imagine so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, this has got to be, you know, I was trying to rack my brain on, you know, the severity of sports crimes that we may have seen over the years and stuff. And, you know, this one's obviously front and center in the hockey world right now, but I can't remember something this egregious on this scale that's come up in other sports. I mean, you know, who knows if this stuff has happened in other contexts and whatnot, but the fact that, you know, this is being brought to public light and probable prosecutions are going to be happening amongst multiple people is just remarkable.
I just wanted to, and then, sorry, Dan, I want you to jump in too. Rick Westhead had a tweet from January the 24th, so a couple of days ago, mm-hmm. and he kind of confirmed what we kind of brainstormed the last couple times we've spoken about this topic. He writes, "I've connected with multiple Crown attorneys and defense lawyers who have expertise prosecuting and defending sexual assault cases. Based on the news, they all agree it's clear the alleged victim in the 2018 World Junior case, referred to as EM in court documents, is committed to cooperating with police, testifying in court, and facing cross-examination from multiple highly skilled defense lawyers." So maybe that truly was the, you know, the thing holding everything back, was whether or not mm-hmm. this young woman would really be fully gung-ho in following through with all of these things, given mm-hmm. all the circumstances. I think that's a fair thing to kind of think about.
Yeah, and that's an important fact to know too. I think that I agree, Manny. That's a really that's a critical element in how this case hinges, whether it swings to, you know, stay private or, you know, just stay in the filing cabinet, or if this is going to get some legs. And yeah, I think that once you get that, then that's the catalyst to move this forward. And it sounds like, you know, they're willing to go forward with it for sure.
I don't know. I don't know what to say. You guys are obviously much more in tune with this than I am, being, you know, lawyers and Canadians, and I'm just a guy who's trying to learn as much about all this as I hope the listeners are taking away from this as well. Just weird, hard circumstance to wrap the mind around in all of this.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to have to come out of the, you know, I just want to know at this point, like after 6 years, like we mentioned a little while ago in the episode, I just want to know kind of who's at issue for sure. Like, stop with the fucking secrecy games and stuff. It's been 6 years. There's been, I mean, God knows how much stuff under the table going on. Let's just move this forward at this point and, you know, stop with the secrecy of the identities and all this shit. And let's just keep going on it. And I don't mean that with regard to the victim, but I mean that with regard to the defendants.
What do you think the London police, media, whatever they're doing, release, talking, whatever happens to on February 5th, are they going to specifically name these five players that we assume are the guilty parties? Like, what could they possibly say otherwise than naming the players?
If charges are pressed,
yeah,
they will absolutely name the players, and they will say what the charges being brought on those players are. And that's, I don't know, maybe they're giving these guys until, you know, February something to show up in London, but I really can't imagine. I suppose it's in the realm of possibility, but I can't imagine that they're going to hold a press conference and say, yeah, we just wanted to corroborate a couple of things with these five guys, and well, it's ongoing still, and we don't know what's happening. That's not happening. There's something definitely moving forward here. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine that they would call a press conference to be about nothing, especially given the public outcry and, you know, the pressure that has been put on London police to actually, you know, everybody else has finished their investigation. What's going on with you? And, you know, now this is their chance to stand up and say what they've been up to and say whether or not there's charges laid and who it is against and what the nature of those crimes are.
Is there like, Manny, is there like the equivalent of like a district attorney that would probably, because usually in like high profile cases, you would have that person make, you know, commentary on behalf of the state or the Commonwealth or whatever. Is that something that you think would happen here? Because I guess you could get the chief of police that could make some sort of comment on it, but it'd be more appropriate for a district attorney to probably say those things, I'd imagine.
There is a Crown Attorney kind of office, the best that I can understand it. But it's the police that have the absolute right to bring charges. And if there is some kind of question or they're not sure how strong their case is, they can, you know, file a report to the Crown Attorney's office and sort of get some leeway or judgment on, you know, whether or not, yes, there's a case here. You know, there isn't. Here's what you are going to need to get. Mm-hmm. Yep. And let them know if there's enough evidence to go forward. That's basically it. The police have every right to go through with it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine whatever, you know, press conference, or I don't know if it'll take questions, but they can't talk in vagaries during that. There has to be specifics about either who's involved, what the process is going to be, where they're at here. They can't just be like, our investigation is ongoing, you know, see ya. Like that, it can't, I think it's a great question, Dan, you know, what can we expect from them? But I would have to think that there's going to be a level of specifics that substantially moves this whole thing forward.
You gotta assume it's something. They're probably gonna want to be as vague as possible, but you can't just go, these players are here and the investigation's ongoing or something like that. Like, you gotta have to, at some point, you know, spill the beans as to what, who's actually here and what they're being charged with. And, you know, maybe the process goes, you know, on quietly in the background, but I assume this press conference has to have some kind of finality to what's actually going on here.
Yeah. I mean, they can't just go up there and just say, we're not going to say who's involved. And then all of a sudden you check the docket tomorrow morning and say, oh, here are the names, you know, like, that'd be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. It's not going to be like that. I'm pretty sure that they're going to say, you know, charges were filed and these are the charges. And they're going to go and say what the charges are. They're going to say who the defendants are in this case. And they're probably going to say when they're expected in court and whether or not, you know, bail was granted, which it will be, and what's going on there. But they're, for all the ghouls out there that want every sordid detail, they're not going to be going through stuff like that. That's going to be revealed within the case itself. The police press conference is literally just to tell the public, you know, these are the charges, we are filing them. These are the people at interest here that we're charging. And, you know, it's going to be now put towards the court and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would imagine that they're going to present themselves on the 5th. I mean, at the 4th, I guess on February 4th at the absolute latest as well, because they probably don't want the defendants to present themselves, then like a week to go by. And then it's like, okay, we'll have an announcement at that point. So I'd imagine everything is going to be kind of fast and furious either on the same day or the day before.
How long does this kind of stuff take to move along in the Canadian court system?
that's a big question. Truthfully, I wouldn't expect Carter Hart back this year.
I did not, no. I don't think anyone, for that matter, quite frankly.
No. I'm saying even if he's not guilty, even if he is just somebody that is of interest and is relevant to the case for whatever reason, this is going to be ongoing. And I would imagine that it'll be maybe 2 months, 3 months before they get, you know, their preliminary hearing and their first hearing and whatever. This could go on for easily a year.
Yeah. I think it's probably a year. I know in the, I have a little bit of relation to the civil system. I'm managing one case. It's a civil case that's going on up in Ontario now for work. And, I'm just kind of, we have local counsel who's handling it. I'm just kind of working with that person. But one thing that I'm getting used to is how goddamn slow. I mean, the system in the U.S. is slow, but the Canadian civil system is unbelievably slow. Yeah. like, you know, we're like a year. I'm like, what is going on with this case? And it's like, oh, we haven't even started discovery yet. I'm like, well, what's going on? It's like, is there a case management order or what? But, you know, if that's any sort of barometer as to how the criminal system, where I would imagine the criminal system is a bit faster. There's more urgency involved. Yeah. There's, you know, there's more at stake involved. I agree, Manny. I mean, I would, you know, just kind of spitballing. I would think we're probably looking for a trial date at least a year out, maybe more than that.
Yeah. At least 6, 7, 8 months out for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without question.
Yeah.
We've spoken, I wanted to ask you a question here, Mike. We've spoken in the past about, you know, in Canada, you could do a judge trial.
Yeah.
Or a jury trial, and we mm-hmm. talked at length. Listeners, you can go back into the archives and listen to it mm-hmm. and hear how we were right all along, but not about Carter Hart or anything, but about the actual
technically
process.
Were.
Yeah, procedures. And, yeah.
We talked about how it would be in a defense case's best interest to go for a jury trial because you need to convince 12 people that somebody is, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt in order to secure the conviction. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine it is going to be a jury trial. I don't know what the procedure would be to choose between one or the other, or if there is a choice from counsel, I don't know. But in terms of the defense, are these players going to be tried individually or together? Mm. They all have different lawyers. Do they all, are they all going to be present in court at the same time? Are there going to be five different court cases or just the one court case? If so, wouldn't it be prudent for all of these guys to have the one lawyer or legal team working on this? I don't know. What say you? What would be like the thing to look for here, Mike?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Manny. I mean, from what I've seen in the criminal system in the U.S., a lot of times, like when you have these multi-defendant cases, they're usually tried individually. It takes a little bit more time, but there's, you know, unique facts and circumstances with regard to each defendant. And I've seen them done individually before. If it would be done as one, I guess I could also see that. Now, the problem here that's so difficult here is like you can't really like sequester, you know, if there is like testimony by one of the defendants, you know, sometimes you'll sequester other witnesses out of the courtroom because it might, you know, kind of poison their testimony if they're hearing what others are saying and, you know, going around that and whatnot. But they can't do that in this case because they're all named defendants and they all have a right to be in the courtroom. But, you know, in terms of like a strategy or something, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not sure what I would do in this case. And I think that the system will decide for them if they're going to be tried separately or individually. I don't think they're going to have a choice in that matter.
I wonder if the Crown makes that decision.
It's possible. It's,
yeah,
it's possible. Or, you know, the judge, and when you say the Crown, that means like the prosecution. Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's possible. I mean, the court would ultimately make that decision. I think they may file a motion to, you know, consolidate or something, or, you know, whatever they think is advantageous to them. And then there could be opposition to that. And the defense is, no, we need to do it separately for these reasons. I am sure that there is substantial amount of case law and precedent on how that works in the criminal system. I don't know what that is. That's beyond me. But I'm sure that there is some case law on it if it's not already statutorily set forth.
The last time we talked about this topic, by the way, was Frequent Flyer number 159, titled Quagmire of Bureaucracy, on November 24, 2023, if anyone wants to dig that up in the archives and listen to our take on the, you know, Hockey Canada investigation side of all of this and the depth we went into on that as well. So
nice. From a strategic standpoint, though, I probably want to do it individually. I think if I was a defense attorney, I think you want to keep your world as narrow as possible on this one person and, you know, not influence, you know, what other people may have done or the people in the courtroom and just try to keep everything in that one little small sphere, and just take your chances that way, you know, with the result rather than kind of confusing the jury. I mean, that's also a concern at these is, you know, what's the likelihood of jury confusion? Probably very high in this situation, you know, given who did what, when, and why is going to be very difficult to, you know, keep straight here. So, I mean, my best guess would be that they're tried individually and that's how it's going to go. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to be negotiating kind of as one group, or they're communicating as a group, or, you know, I'm not sure how that's going to work. I'd imagine that they probably have already been in discussion. I don't know if they have the same lawyer that's representing them or not. They might. And in that case, they're, you know, probably preparing behind closed doors to make sure everybody's saying the same thing, or, you know, at this point, it might be too late for that. There's already been investigations done, and that evidence will be probably admissible in this case. So, you know, we're probably well past, you know, beyond all that.
I wanted to, I saw there was a couple of people online that seemed genuinely confused because Sam Carcitti had posted something, and I'm only mentioning Sam's name because the people were mentioning Sam in particular. So I just wanted to get what your take is. It said Danny Breer may not address the Carter Hart situation today. In 2022, attorney Scott Fenton, representing Hart, told the Toronto Star that the goalie did not engage in any wrongdoing in the 2018 sex scandal. At the time, Fenton said Hart was among the players who cooperated with the London, Ontario Police Service investigation and was, quote, cleared of any wrongdoing. Why has the NHL taken 20 months to investigate and is apparently still investigating is puzzling. I would assume that's, I mean, some people are saying, well, oh, then he's not necessarily getting brought up on charges because he was cleared of wrongdoing. That's the only reason why I'm mentioning this.
Yeah.
I think it's important to remember that at some point the London police closed their case and then had to reopen the case because there was a bunch of other evidence that came to light. So I don't know if that timeline helps any of the listeners that might be thinking about, you know, what Carter Hart's lawyer said and that he was cleared of wrongdoing. I don't know if that still applies or not. I would assume it does not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, whatever the lawyer said is just irrelevant. It's not going to make a damn difference in really anything. Lawyer can say my client is, you know, the second coming of Mother Teresa, and doesn't mean a damn thing. So, or my client's completely innocent. This is all false. You know, okay, congratulations. It's not admissible evidence. Doesn't mean anything. The fact that he said he was cleared of wrongdoing, I mean, that could mean anything. And like you said, Manny, I think that there were moments in the timeline here where the case may have been closed. Additional evidence came in later in time. You know, what is being cleared of wrongdoing actually mean at that point in time? What does cleared mean? Did he sign something? It just like that doesn't resonate in terms of, you know, him being like completely exculpated in this scenario. It's funny that I guess Sam mentioned that. It is rather confusing because you read something like that a couple of years ago and you're like, well, how does that square with what's going on now? But you know, that wasn't a finding of fact by a judicial body. That wasn't, you know, a judicial order. That wasn't a judgment. Simply attorney words are completely meaningless, you know, when it comes to these sort of things. That'd be my response to the Sam's quote there.
I can't imagine as a lawyer would come out and be like, this motherfucker's guilty. some level of, lying going on there, I assume.
Yeah, yeah, you know, these charges are categorically false. Okay, yes, and we've heard that. Yeah.
And I'm only mentioning it because people were referencing Sam Carcitti's tweets from January 24. I'm not saying this is what Sam Carcitti is saying, but obviously he's quoting this Scott Fenton, Carter Hart's attorney, that he was, quote, cleared of any wrongdoing at that time. So I don't know. I think it was part of the whole confusion of when this story dropped that people were kind of confused because, like Dan, you alluded to at the beginning of the show, there were other names that were much more prominently mentioned more often.
Yeah.
Now, granted, without any evidence, but people were kind of mentioning those players that were mentioned earlier in the episode. And Carter Hart was always that question mark that,
Yeah.
Like, we're not sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah, that's a good point. It is confusing. I wish that, you know, sometimes the attorneys wouldn't say that, but, you know, it's basically the equivalent of saying my client is innocent. The prosecution has nothing on him. Okay, great. That's a great statement. You know, I'm glad you said that, but it really doesn't carry that much weight when it comes to how the proceedings are going to go.
So this thing's going to go to trial. Sorry, Dan, you go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I just wanted to share an article that I got on tsn.ca, again from Rick Westhead. And it's from September the 13th, 2022. One of the people that's going to be key here, and I think we talked about it when we talked about sexual assault charges, and that consent is key, central to all of this. We know about, you know, insane amounts of alcohol being involved, all kinds of stuff. There was that weird guy in the bar that was like encouraging this young lady to, you know, drink more and, you know, have go party with these guys and whatever. I forget, that guy was really creepy. I don't even know who that guy
wasn't
is.
He like he some worked high-ranking like, member of Nike or something like that, or
yeah, that's what I was thinking. I don't know exactly, but he was like some kind of manager type.
Yeah, some high-ranking somebody that was involved somewhere in the line.
Like that's creepy as. Yeah, you know what? But this article from Rick Westhead. So this person, whoever this is going to be of like key to both the Crown and the defense. And the title of the article is Agent Says Former World Junior Player Unsure of What He Witnessed in a London Hotel Room. So basically it goes on to say, and here's the quote from the unnamed player. My guy got a text message from one of his teammates. Oh, sorry. This is from the agent talking about what this player said. My guy got a text message from one of his teammates that there was a party going on with pizza. So he went up to the room. He did not know how to process what was going on when he saw what was happening in the room. He did not know if this was consensual group sex or if it was indeed a sexual assault. It is true that he did not intervene and say stop. You can judge him for not intervening. What would you do in the same situation when you were a teenager? Is this something he should lose his career and reputation over? This person, whoever this is, and apparently it goes on to say that the person left the room after about 10 minutes and they were confused and they didn't know what the hell's going on in there. I don't even know. If that person doesn't know kind of what's going on there, I think that there needs to be some clarity there. And I think that the Crown and the defense, they might want to really be focusing on this particular person and finding out what they've got to say about what they saw that night. Mm-hmm. Ultimately in that room, there's going to be EM side of it. And then these players are going to have a side mm-hmm. of it as well. They've all apparently been cooperating. They're all going to show up and either surrender or, you know, whatever, present mm-hmm. themselves, however you want to call it. I don't know if they believed that what they were doing was wrong or not, which is weird, which talks about how we think that young people are very mm-hmm. confused by everything right now with all of the mm-hmm. stuff coming at them. And I think that that's a weird, and obviously it doesn't really matter if they know, it's about the young lady. But this person that went into that room and was there for 10 minutes before leaving, and they don't even know, like what the, mm-hmm. what, like they knew that there was sexual things going on, mm-hmm. but they couldn't tell like what the nature of that was.
Mm-hmm. I guess they couldn't tell the nature of the level of consent that was involved. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought that reading that, and I'm like, wow, that whoever that is.
Yeah, that takes you right in there.
They're going to have to be on the stand and saying like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It'll be testimony.
Outside of those five people and the young lady, that's somebody that sounds pretty important to me. You want to know, as a jury especially, what did that person actually think was happening in there?
Yeah, and there's probably other eyewitnesses as well. I don't think this was limited to, you know, the five that are reporting plus one here. There's probably at least a handful of more teammates that, you know, were eyewitnesses in some capacity. One other thing that was particularly particularly jarring about this was that there was like a video that was recorded at the end of what happened in the hotel room. Basically, I don't know if you guys read about this. It was like they asked the victim to appear on a video to state that she was sober and consensual or something, which just adds a whole nother layer of absolute insanity to this. So there is video footage of, in some capacity, of what happened that night in that room. I don't know if that's the only video or there are others, but there's at least that one where the players had decided, hey, shit, you know, and that kind of goes to whether or not they knew something was wrong. Yeah, they fucking knew something was wrong because they wanted to get a video of the victim stating that she was sober and consensual. And there was some, I won't get into the details of some other things that one of the articles said on it, you know, from TSN or something like that. But I thought that just kind of adds to just how absurd and egregious this whole thing is. And maybe goes to the players, you know, level of mens rea, which is Latin for your mental state on here. And that, you know, they knew what the hell was going on.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that video at some point that it was, which, yeah, seems to indicate the,
I mean, the level of sophistication to execute this act is, I can't, it's just unfathomable that this was concocted by these individuals and carried through.
Got anything else to add here, Manny?
No, and then apparently, like, at least one, I don't know if I remember reading more than one of the players were in contact with this young woman after the fact. I don't know if it was on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and I don't know. I don't know if it was just checking and making sure that, you know, hey, everything's good, like, you know, or if it was something nefarious, or if it was, you know, I don't know what the nature of the conversation was, but apparently they've got stuff, you know, interactions between these people, and I'm sure that they've got that video potentially that you were referring to. This is a mess. Like,
yeah,
this,
I mean, there's quite a bit. There is quite a bit here.
Like, and that's what I mean. Like, realistically, and how long does this case last once it goes to trial? Like, this isn't like a 2 days and then we're out of court. Like, I think that there's going to be like quite a bit of layers here to determine. Is mens rea a thing in the United States as well?
Yeah, yeah, it's a necessary element to prove a crime.
So that's up here as well. So, and then there's, we have British common law stuff, which is precedent. I'm sure you guys have something similar. So we're going to have to look through, like, I don't know how many cases are out there with, you know, involving group sex with hockey players and consent. But I do know that there was a case when I was doing the first year I did the prospect report, Dan, following Igor Serjuk and the Victoriaville Tigers, the QMJHL, there were two players on that team, not Igor Serjuk, that were found guilty of sexually assaulting a woman in a hotel. So, I mean, there's like this stuff with young guys and not knowing, you know, what they're doing, or they're confused, or they're taking their hockey player status into really unhealthy kind of attitudes towards women. I don't know, man. It's all fucked up. Society's fucked up. This situation is fucked up. I apologize for the language. This is gross to talk about.
Right. But I don't know how else to phrase it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to phrase it besides this is all fucked up. And, you know, we'll get more, hopefully, on the presser on the 5th. And I assume we'll be back shortly after that to dissect more once we know about it. Nice. It's probably gonna be a topic we're gonna have to revisit quite a few times over the next little while, I'm sure. So We'll call it a day here. Well done, gentlemen, guiding us through this one. You know, one thing I like about this show is when stuff like this needs to happen, we have the resources to put it out there and help the audience that, you know, hopefully get something out of this. I got something out of it. That's for damn sure. Sit back and let you guys do your thing. So appreciate that. At Dan the Flyer Fan at Burley Puck and Burley underscore pod. Website burleypuck.com. Dan the Flyer Fan underscore jerseys on Instagram. And Manny, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Manny Benavides. And as always, burleypuck.com.
Mike.
Check out the CHL prospect report when you get a chance.
All right, yeah, you can find me on Twitter, X, at flyer underscore AF.
All right, everyone. Until next time, goodbye and good night.